I'm Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal the podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokies. Today we are talking about Season 5, Episode 4, The French Connection Job. Beth, what did you think?
I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what I predicted for this episode?
I don't think you were correct.
Was it something to do with like Interpol or something?
I think it was something to do with Interpol. I think it was something to do with airplanes. Like,
yeah.
Like connecting flights.
Right, okay.
I don't think you guessed it because I feel like I would have remembered if you guessed it.
Because, like, lifting the podcast curtain, it's been a couple of weeks. Shit happens.
Almost forgot how to do the intro for a moment.
So, to be fair, we do that when we're recording regularly.
Yeah.
But I opened the episode today. And I saw the title and I was like, I can't remember what I fucking guessed, but I was like, maybe it was something to do with the metro. But then I was like, okay, I would have been entirely wrong regardless. Yes. But the reason I bring this up is because I was right about something, Jamie. Mm-hmm. I was right about something. And that thing was the truffles. Mm-hmm. I was like, so they're really pushing hard this drug thing, but yeah, that just seems kind of weird. Like, that doesn't seem to make that much sense. And even mm-hmm. Nate was like, really? Drugs? And I was like, okay, I think it might not be drugs because it's culinary. And I was like, could it be fancy ass truffles from France per se? And then Hardison is doing the thing where he's like, oh yeah, he's going to like all these weird backwards locations in France. And I was like, looking for truffles? And then we got like the confirmation because I literally
had... That's like, I've connected the dots. It's like, you haven't connected...
I'd had all these, like, I'd already thought like, oh, it could be truffles. And then Elliot like has this moment where he's walking past the guys with the bag, and I have a note that just says, did he just sniff them? What, do they have a very distinctive cologne?
The answer is yes, because it is, in fact, truffles.
The fact that it's truffles. I was like, I love that I went to distinctive cologne before I went with truffles, the thing I had already been theorizing could be the thing that they are transporting. I was like, damn, how? I'm a bit stupid. But I was so proud of myself that I didn't even care.
That's okay. Look, you're always stupid, so it's not much of a difference.
No, it's not shocking.
No.
It's not new news, really.
No.
It's just a continuation of a previously understood fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's what I was excited about.
That's what you're excited about this week?
Yeah.
I was expecting you to like this episode.
Mm.
Or, like, maybe not all of the episode, but at least certain elements of it, because I know you do love Chef Elliot.
I love Chef Elliot.
And this episode does, in fact, contain my favorite Elliot fight scene of all time. The kitchen fight scene where they keep on just going, Patrick, go in, get me the chef. And then he just like fully knocks them out and just keeps on continuing cooking. And all of his students are like, what the fuck are you doing? But they're all like a little bit too scared of him to actually stop cooking.
I am obsessed.
Chef's kiss, brilliant. Extra relevant here.
I am obsessed with the way that Elliot ran his kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
The way that there was something he said, let me find my note. Yeah. Oh, so it was just before the fight scene, actually. It was like when the first hitter like came into the kitchen
mm-hmm.
and he asked like, oh, like, where's this thing? And the student said, 30 seconds, chef. And he goes, I need it in 20, buddy. And I was like, I don't know. Something about that made me very fond. Like, just the way that he's like, you need to be faster, but he's saying it in a way that's like constructive and like, you know,
Teacher Elliot is a real thing. We've seen him do
yeah.
this with hitters before, like be like, you know, if I don't teach you, how are you going to improve?
Learn.
Like,
but also, if you're not cooking, stay out of my kitchen is so funny. And there's like another part later where he gets the guy to try his sauce before he takes him out. He's like, oh, too much ginger? No, great. Gone.
Gone.
So
immediately.
Funny.
It is one of, like, that's one of the reasons why it is my favorite Elliot fight scene of all time. Just, like, the humor of the way he's like, oh, yeah, just, you know, try my sauce.
Yeah.
Like, he's still running a fully functional kitchen.
Literally. And, like, when he is, like, clearing the kitchen because, like, the final mm-hmm. guy comes in and they're going to have the bigger fight, which I actually honestly was not that impressed by. I've got some notes about that, but we'll mm-hmm. get into it in a minute. I love that as he's shepherding everyone out of the kitchen, he goes out of his way to still give them feedback. He's like, good job today, guys. And I'm like, you are a bizarre, bizarre man.
It's that thing of like, Elliot thinks he's the normal one of the group, but that's only because they're grading on a curve.
Mm.
Like, that man is still unhinged.
Oh, yeah.
It's just because, you know, like, you put him next to like Elliot or like...
You put Elliot next to Elliot.
Yeah, if you put him next to Elliot, obviously... You know, if you put him next to, like, Hardison or Parker or Sophie or Nate, and, like, I do love this episode. We get Parker literally calling them all out. She's like, everyone on the team's got something. Like, Elliot's got food. Sophie's got acting. Like, you know, it goes unsaid, but she's basically like, Hardison's got all of his geek stuff. Yeah. And then she goes, you've got this bizarro need to control other people.
I know. It's so
And he goes to refute it. And then he's like, actually...
Yeah, no, I had a note where I was like, I love that a sicko love of controlling people is legitimately Nate's canonical hobby. Like, everyone needs a hobby. Nate's is just lightly psychopathic.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's why he's very successful at what he does. You know, like, it is very fun. I do really enjoy, like, some of the elements of characterization this week are, like, I just really enjoy them. Like, they're not, like, particularly important in any real way, but, like, you know, sometimes it's enough for the media to just be fun.
Mm.
Though I think we do need to touch on what I would describe as the most controversial piece of characterization this episode.
Yeah.
Which is the whole Hardison not tipping thing.
Yeah, that confused the shit out of me.
I will confess, I watched this the first time, like when I was like younger. I watched this the first time and it didn't even register to me. I was like, yeah, no, you don't tip a delivery driver. Like,
yeah, I mean, we don't.
They get paid to do their job. I forgot for a second there that America is a capitalist hellscape.
I mean, where you say that as if Australia isn't, but, like, I get your point.
Like, Australia is a capitalist hellscape with a living wage.
Mm.
You know, like, not so much since inflation, but, yeah. Like...
And not if Coles and Woolworths have anything to say about it. Not if Coles and Woolworths have But, yeah, no, I get what you mean. Like, tipping is not a cultural thing here. We just don't do it.
Like, it wouldn't even occur to me to tip a delivery driver. And that's not because I'm a bitch. It's because...
It's just because why would you?
The delivery driver does, in fact, get paid enough to live off his wages. Like...
We don't have an expectation that you will be tipped. I have never expected to be tipped for any work I've ever done. Mm-hmm. I've certainly worked my fair share of hospo. You know, like, that's just... And so have you. Like, yeah. People used to tell me to, like, keep the change. And I was like, I literally am not allowed to...
I think so, if I wanted to, I also, when I worked in hospitality, I did have a few people like, oh, keep the change. And like, theoretically I could have, but like, it never seemed worth it. It was always like 80 cents. And I'm like, I might as well donate that 80 cents to the charity tin that I have above the till.
We had to,
like,
put it in the charity boxes. Yeah.
Like, I'm not bothering keeping 80 cents because I'm getting paid $30 an hour to be here. Like,
yeah,
that exactly. 80 cents is not enough. Like, it's one, if everyone was tipping, then it could be a significant amount of money. But it's like one person giving me 80 cents, it really makes no difference to my wage. Like, if everyone was tipping and like you were getting, you know, 80 cents to $5 per tip, then it's probably worth, you know, keeping your tips and collecting them. But it's like, it is more annoying for me to keep the 80 cents than to just literally put it in the tin next to the till.
It's actually more of an inconvenience to hold the spare change in your pocket. Like, yeah. But no, I am just so used to seeing tipping, like, in American media. And, like, it comes up all the time. We get exported so much American content. Mm-hmm. It's, like, to the point where actually now I've found a couple places who do ask for tips. Like, delivery tips. And I always refuse because I'm like, no, we don't do that here.
Yeah. And it's the sort of thing that I didn't even notice was a thing until I went online and started engaging with the Leverage fandom more. And I saw a lot of people being like, oh, this is such a disservice to like his character. Like, Hardison grew up poor. He'd understand the importance of tipping. Like,
and also it's not like he's in a position where he doesn't have the finances.
Yeah. Like, man is loaded. Like, dude is fucking rich as shit.
He's like, clearly spending big money on the things he's getting delivered to. So it's like, it's not like he could even pass it off as like, oh, I'm only having the bare essentials delivered. It's like, no, I'm having my recreational laser delivered.
And like, good for him. But also, like, yeah, tipping is just something that I didn't even like. It was not something that I thought there was going to be a conversation about in the fandom, because I was like, oh, yeah, you just don't tip. Like, tipping's not like, because we get fed so much American media, and I also know that a lot of like the American media we get fed has a lot of stereotypes that are not necessarily true of America. And so, like, I've always kind of just assumed that tipping is one of those things. Like, really? I know that it was a thing in, like, restaurants. Like, you tip your waiter. But I didn't realize it was, like, you tip literally every service worker you ever come into contact with.
Well, see, I knew that because of movies where, like, they go to a hotel and the person would bring their bags up. Which, again, is not a thing that I have ever had anyone do for me. Like, I'm struggling into the elevator with my bags and dragging them upstairs and shit.
Maybe that's just because you're poor, Bethany.
Yeah, maybe I'm not going to the right kind of hotel.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, and they would tip the, like,
the bus boy or whatever. Like,
yeah, they do it in Supernatural. In Playthings. Like, the guy stops and he asks for a tip. And, like...
Tipping is wild to me. Yeah. It's sort of the long and short of it.
It just seems insane that, like, the job that you perform wouldn't pay you for the job you perform, and you would instead expect the customers...
Someone else to pay you directly pay you for the job you perform. Additionally, yeah.
For the job that, like, that just seems insane to me, personally.
Seems like some sort of bizarro, like, capitalist hellscape. Like...
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean your boss doesn't just...
Pay you.
Like,
that's literally their job.
What do you mean your minimum wage is still like $5 an hour? Like,
I think it's $7. To be fair, $7 American, so it's like $12 here. But again,
like, minimum wage in Australia for like someone over the age of 21 is like $25 minimum.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I haven't made less than $12 an hour since I was 14.
Mm-hmm. Last time I made $12 an hour was because I was like 14 and working. Hospital. Off the books. Like, like, I wasn't even getting paid legally, which is, like, fine, because I was 14, not really technically legally allowed to work yet. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, honestly, like, watching it back with the lens, like, it does seem kind of weird that he wouldn't tip. But, yeah, like, I'm so Australian that it didn't even cross my mind the first time that it was, like, tipping would be socially expected in that situation.
The only reason I realized that he wasn't, like, that anything weird was happening was because Elliot pointed it out.
Yeah.
Like, if Elliot had not made the point of, like, you have to tip him, then I wouldn't have even considered him not tipping. I wouldn't have even noticed him not tipping him. It's only because they made a point out of it.
But even then, it just seemed weird to me that they made a point out of it. I was like, okay, but, like, it's a delivery. Like, I've just always kind of assumed that, like, tipping was something, like, you tip a waiter. Like, that's sort of the industries where you expect to be tipped. I didn't realize delivery driver also fell into the, like, industries where you would expect to be tipped category. Though, we need to move off of tipping because we've been on it for way too long. Did you have somewhere you'd like to, like, something else you'd like to examine this week, or how you feeling? How you feeling about it all?
So, would you prefer me to go into something I really liked or something that I didn't like or was confused by?
Let's get the confused by stuff out the way this week.
Okay.
Because, like, there's also bits about this week that I don't love and I'm a bit confused by. Okay. So, let's get all of that out of the way, and then we can go and recap all of the shit that is actually really interesting this week.
Okay. So I want to jump right back to the end of the episode. You were talking before about the fight scene and stuff, and I was saying that the sort of last part of it I really didn't love, and I want to kind of explain why. So number one, I just feel like the choreo was just not quite as good as normal. I don't know if it's because they were fighting with the knives and, like, the lid of the pot or whatever, and it was just, like, obviously they're in quite an enclosed space, so it's kind of hard to, like, shoot and move. Yeah. I just didn't feel like it was that...
It didn't live up to Leverage's normal standard of fight scenes, which is a bit odd considering this is such an Elliot-heavy episode, and normally Christian Kane, who plays Elliot, has a really big part of, like, the choreography and that for his character... Especially when it comes to, like, fight scenes and that. So it's a bit weird that, like, especially after what I think is a really, really strong fight scene. As I said earlier, it's one of my favorites in the entire series. Like,
it ends on kind of a flop.
It ends on a little bit of a flop. What I do think is the very, very ending, though, where he's got sort of the other dude by the ropes. And Nate asks, like, and he asks Nate to, like, you know, cool off your dog. I think that's really fascinating from a character standpoint.
I actually didn't like that either, and I have reasons. So my other point was that whatever the fuck slow motion ripple effects they were using, I don't know why they thought it was necessary. Mm-hmm. It was giving Supernatural, and, like, in Supernatural it kind of makes sense because they are fighting, like, demons and shit, but, like, in this...
And also,
like,
Supernatural is bad, so...
Oh, okay. But, like, you know, it makes more sense in the context. This I was just, like, it feels like you just got a shiny new special effect and you wanted to use it, but, like, it didn't make
sense. Yeah,
it was just weird. I personally, like, I don't mind the guy saying to Nate, like, cool off your dog. Like, I think that that is fine because I think that it makes sense. The part that I didn't love is that Nate does. I personally think Nate should have let Elliot make that call himself. Like, Elliot was not going to kill that guy anyway, but the fact that Nate says to him, like, enough's enough, and then Elliot backs down, I think only cements that Elliot is Nate's attack dog and removes his own autonomy from the situation. Like, if Nate had instead said, it's up to you, it changes
so
everything.
I think you're missing a fundamental point of that. And it is actually something that we've talked about before, so I will pull back on previous conversations we've had about this one. But essentially, This is something that happens quite often. And it's about the illusion of control.
Yeah.
Because it's not about Nate making the decision, because it doesn't matter what Nate says, Elliot will do what he likes. They're a team, they trust each other. It's about the illusion of power. It makes Nate seem more powerful. We've had the same thing with Sterling before. It's about the way that Elliot always underplays his sort of
agency. And I get that. In this particular instance, though, I don't think that it was necessary to make Nate look more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I think that for the guy that was, you know, on the verge of death, I think that it would have been more intimidating to him for Nate to have said to Elliot, to like give Elliot like the power in that decision, especially mm-hmm. if they are already viewing Nate as the more powerful person in that duo, for Nate to then be like, well, I couldn't really care less if you live or die. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it up to Elliot.
Because I think it's necessary because he knows who Elliot is. So it's playing into the illusion of who he thinks Elliot is. Because what he knows of Elliot, Elliot's always been basically a henchman, needs to solidify that Elliot's still just a henchman.
I think I personally would have preferred it if Nate had relinquished the control, even the illusion of the control, to Elliot there. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I respect your opinion. I don't think you're wrong. I just think that personally, like, I would have preferred it. I know that we have talked about this thing of like, you know, the illusion of control and stuff, but I'm like, I don't think that I personally have perceived its relevance and importance enough to fully appreciate how important it is to maintain that illusion. Like, I've seen it in individual cons, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely. But I don't see it being that relevant as, like, a broader understanding throughout the, like, I don't know, the broader criminal community. Like, I don't see it as being a fundamental point of their understanding of Elliot. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that he is, at this point, like, I think he's proven himself too many times in too many ways for them to view him as, like, for them to underestimate him at all, regardless of whether or not they think he's under a control of someone else. I think that they need to be, that theoretically they would recognize him as his own agent just in his skill set. Like, and the thing is, like, he was controlled by Moreau, but then he turned on Moreau. So it's like, it's also not a sense of loyalty either. They can't be like, oh, well, he's really loyal to this particular cause. And, you know, and we can always bank on that because that's not true either. So I don't know. I feel like I understand the matter of it. And I understand, like, yes, in absolutely in individual circumstances, it is important that they're convinced of this. I just don't think that this instance requires them to be convinced of it. And I also don't think that the broader criminal community needs to be thoroughly convinced of it. Like, that's, I think, for me. And so, like, that's why it, like, leaves a bit of, like, an iffy taste for me with... It just feels like Nate is removing his agency. Even if he's playing into something, it just feels like it's maybe not necessary.
I'd be really interested to see if anyone's, like, listening and they have, like, a really specific opinion on this, like, how you read that scene. Because for me, yeah, I think it's a really important piece of characterization and sort of the way the team works together, which, you know, it's probably still that regardless of how you view it, but it's just whether you like it as a piece of characterization or you don't. His journey is less about... I need to be someone who doesn't hurt other people. And more about, I need to find a space where I don't have to hurt other people to survive. Because the team never asks him to, you know, kill anybody else. Like, obviously, he still hurts other people, but, like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's different.
It's context. Different. Yeah.
Yeah. And the aim is to incapacitate, not to. Which I would argue, honestly, probably harder. It's not in terms of, like, emotionally, but, like, physically, like, as a skill, I think it'd be harder to incapacitate someone than to kill them. Because, like, you have to know how and when to stop. Yeah. Like.
And, like, I think this is something the show does really well. It, like, Elliot is constantly holding himself back. And that's why the like, conversations around Elliot and control are so fascinating. Because, yeah, he did go from being someone who, you know, straight up just murdered people to get what he needed to get, to someone who, like, was more focused on, like, you know, if you can just knock them out, just knock them out. Like, murder is no longer his MO, so now he has to very purposefully make sure that he's not breaching the moral code that he's trying to live by, despite the fact that he didn't live by it for so long.
Yeah. It's a bit of a tricky, complex one, that one. I think it also comes down to, I don't know about you, but I feel like Nate has been off this episode and honestly the last couple. Like, and so I feel like maybe that's also playing into it as well, because I just feel like something is different there. And I don't know if it's just me. Like, to be fair, like, watching these last four episodes has been so sporadic. Like, we've had so much going on. Yeah. And, like, it's really interrupted, like, the normal viewing schedule. So I don't know if it's just, like, I'm misremembering now, like, or what. But I feel like Nate is just, like, something is not it. Like, the way that the episode is introduced. First of all, the cold opens are still bad. I don't know how the fuck we're five seasons in and the cold opens are still terrible.
Cold opens are just something that they never really mastered.
I cannot understand why. Like, theoretically, there should be some of the simplest part of the episode, especially considering, like, the way that Leverage runs. Like, the cons are so complicated and convoluted and, like, there are so many moving pieces, and then the cold opens are usually just, like, fucking bog standard. And they somehow... they're bad every time. But anyway, also, David was kind of giving Tom Hiddleston as Loki. I don't know if it's just me, but, like, the way he was, like, speaking and, like, holding himself was just, like, giving that kind of energy, and was really weird. It was very distracting for me. But essentially, when I think it's Toby, the chef guy who goes to them for help, that Elliot knows.
I don't remember his name, which is weird, because normally I do.
I think it's Toby. I've got a quote later where I say Toby, so I think it must be it. But he comes to Nate and to Elliot, and he's asking for help, and he's sort of, like, pleading his case. And Nate, for, I think, like, the second time in not that very long, has kind of been like, oh, Kish, you know, is this really, do we really want to do this? And I remember bringing it up recently. I can't remember what episode, but, you know, it's just, like, I don't understand why Nate wouldn't want to help. And then it happened again, like... we got this, like, very sweet moment where Elliot is, like, disclosing, like, a bit of his backstory, and he ends on saying, he's one of the guys who kept me from falling all the way down, and now I'm asking the other guy, being Nate, to understand why I'm going to help him. And I actually loved that quote. I thought it was very sweet, and I thought it was a very Elliot-characterized way of, like, including Nate as, like, a fundamental part of, you know, his sort of support network, and I thought that was really nice. And I was like, this is a lovely moment. And I think that's a very poignant statement. But also, I don't understand why Nate wouldn't help anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I'm confused as to why he requires persuasion.
Personally, I've always just put it down to the same reason why in the homecoming job, when Hardison brings a case and basically has to justify why. Like, I think it's Nate's way of testing them to see why it's important. Because... if it's not important, how are they going to do it? If that makes sense. Like, they, you know, normally Nate vets every single job. And even if he knows it's important, he needs to be able to justify why it's important.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's also, like, a little bit of, like, Nate testing his team. Because, like, again, Nate has a sicko need to control people. So, like, him testing his team for me is not something where I'm like, oh, well, it just makes sense.
It doesn't, to me, it doesn't read like testing his team though. Mm-hmm. To me, it reads like, and I mean, maybe it's just because like I am of the perspective of the team member, but like it reads as though, I just don't really think this is our kind of thing. Or like, is there anything we can really do here? And then you compare that to like other scenarios where like the rest of the team has been like, Nate, I don't think there's anything we can do. And he's like, no, we're going to help them. We have to help them. That's what we do. Don't you remember what we do? Why we do this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it just feels like a really weird swing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that just could be like the difference between like drinking Nate versus non-drinking Nate.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's again, as someone who's only ever watched the series through once. Because I think that's the other thing. And like, and I think this kind of falls back into the whole like Elliot meta as well that we were talking about. I think if I went back and I rewatched the series 12 times like you have, then I would probably be like, oh yeah, that characterization makes heaps of sense. And I can understand from a broader, you know, perspective why they did it and blah, blah, blah. Watching it the first round through, particularly interrupted as the last sort of 2 months have been, and also particularly, you know, trying to break down the individual episodes, it can be sometimes difficult to see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
And vice versa in some, you know, regards. And so that just might be another thing like that where I'm like noticing like, oh, he was really weird this episode and just fully forgetting the reason why because I have only seen it once.
I do want to get onto Parker's arc this episode, because I think Parker's arc this episode is really interesting. Do you have any thoughts about it? Do you want to...
I don't really know where to start with it. I thought it was a very sweet little sort of subplot, which was nice for Parker. I liked how they ended the episode with her going to an art museum just to appreciate the art. Mm-hmm. And she still did it in a very Parker way. Like, she still did it after hours by breaking and entering. But she didn't do it to steal. She just did it to appreciate. And I thought that was very sweet. And, you know, I loved the discussion Elliot has with her about, like, his passion for food and, like, his love of food and what it means to him, because it really resonated with me. Like, there's a reason I decided to study food at a tertiary level.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't just for funsies. I can tell you that much. It wasn't a whoopsie-dipsies, like... Yeah. I didn't just decide to go into STEM for the shits and giggles. You know, and the moment where she says to him, like, teach me to like stuff. Oh, broke my little heart.
I also think it's just a fascinating, like, the way it feeds into, like, Parker's always felt like, you know, everyone's always told her that she's missing something. Everyone's always told Parker that who she is not enough. Mm. So I think it's a really interesting sort of, like, look at, well, you know, sometimes Parker starts to think that too. Like, in the way that what everyone said about Parker, you know, not being normal and not, you know, it does actually get to her. As much as she's, like, an incredible character, like, there's only so much of, like, people basically calling you crazy that you can take.
Mm.
And I think...
As we've seen through Leverage many times.
And I think it's a really interesting sort of way to look at her character as someone who, yeah, doesn't necessarily, like stuff. And the stuff that she does like, she sort of gets told constantly, oh, that's weird to like that. Why would you, like, because she does like things. Like, she likes being a thief. Like, that is, you know, like, she's very heavily autistic coded. And if you were going to call anything a hyperfixation of hers, it's going to be stealing shit. Like, you know, he was like, well, what do you see when you see, you know, Michelangelo's David or whatever? And she's like, oh, well, you know, you've got the laser grid and you've got the security cameras and, you know, you need to have a chopper ready for at least 6 ton because you'd have to lift it out of the skylight. Like, you know, for her, it is about the challenge. It's about the technical components of being able to do what she does. And that's what she enjoys. That's what she likes. But so many people tell her, well, that can't be.
Yeah.
Like, that's not.
I think it really ties into this, like, concept where, like, Parker understands the thing that she is stealing is valuable. She doesn't necessarily understand why.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that whole thing with the potato job. And she's like, the diamond's in the potato. Like, why is it important? It's kind of like a similar concept. Like, she understands that, you know, the Mona Lisa is a very expensive painting, but she doesn't understand why.
Yeah.
Like, and she doesn't need to for her job. Like, for the reason that she's interested in it is not because of the artistic value or the emotive value. The reason she's interested in it is the challenge and is the money.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, yeah, why would she spare time, energy, thought on the emotive side of things? It's not relevant.
Yeah.
She's not stealing it to hang it in her house. She's stealing it to give it to someone else. Like,
she's stealing it to sell. Like, she's, you know, she's very good at her job and she does it really well and with a lot of pride. And yeah, I think it's really interesting that we've sort of hit this part of the season and this part of the series. And, like, it is starting to, like,
weigh on her.
The fact that, you know, everyone basically tells her that her hobby's not an actual hobby, pretty much. Like,
yeah, to be fair, her hobby is also her job. Yeah. So I guess they're kind of right in that sense.
But only in the sense that she needs more work-life balance. Like,
Work-life balance is important for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I really love, like I said before, how Elliot describes food and what food is to him. Yeah. And I think that a really undervalued part of food and why it is so important to health, like, obviously, like, the nutrient value and, like, whatever, like, I'm not going to try and tell you that's not important because that would be a bald-faced lie, but so much of what is important about food is the culture surrounding it, is the community surrounding it. Like, when you're looking at a diet and you're looking at ways to improve it, a lot of the time it's not just like, oh, well, you could eat, you know, better quality XYZ. It's also like, well, instead of eating breakfast in the car or in front of the TV or at your desk, you know, try and eat breakfast, like, with a friend or with a family member or, you know, sitting on the porch outside, you know, get some sunlight, sitting with a pet. Like, if you're having dinner, like, with family if possible, or like, you know, all of these things, like the community of it, like cooking as a group or like with another person compared to cooking by yourself. Like all of these things have an impact. And yes, not on the nutritional value of the thing, but on the emotional value and your psychological well-being is, you know, your overall wellness is so implicated by habits surrounding mealtimes, you know, and it's such a cultural thing in so many ways and such a way to connect with people and share with people and experience with people. And I think that that is sort of what Elliot is tapping into. Like, yes, it's the art of the food itself. It's the preparation, but it's also the connection, you know? And he says in the episode that it's kind of like letting a stranger into your mind for a minute, you know, and sharing. It's letting a stranger into your head, letting them feel what you're feeling. And that's why I share it through my food. You know, and yeah, I think it's a really lovely sentiment. And I think that it's nice that he gets to share that with Parker. And that by the end of the episode, she's like, oh, I get it.
Mm.
You know?
Okay. Now we've reached our regularly scheduled programming where we have a segment of this every single goddamn week, I swear. We didn't mean to, but Sophie is a babe this week again. She always is. She never stops being a babe. She is iconic this week. Oh my God, I almost didn't point out. Okay, so Nate has certain aliases, right?
Mm-hmm. No hat this week.
No hat this week. I would argue there are two really iconic Nate aliases.
Jimmy Papadopoulos
and Gnar Snabdash. The N is mostly silent.
Really?
Like, they are, I think within the fandom, they are like some of the favorite aliases. Not for any particular reason other than they're just like, they're very fun. Like a lot of Nate's aliases are like just kind of annoying. Like,
Nate himself is just kind of annoying.
Yeah. And like, to be fair, some of that is by Nate's design because he understands that annoying people will get them to do what you want them to do. But Gnar Snabdash, so iconic.
Mm.
Just that entire bit of like, every time he says his name, he has to be like, the N is mostly silent. Chef's kiss.
I love so also, good. Because what confused me when he said that, I was like, Nate, you're not writing it down. I was like, if you're not pronouncing the N, they're not even going to know there is one. So I thought it was really funny that he kept saying, because I was literally like, where would the N even go?
So it's spelled G-N-A-R, Gnar.
Okay.
That is the correct spelling of Gnar Snabdash.
Funny. Actually, Nate also had a line this week that did make me laugh. Oh, actually, before I get into that, Nate confused the fuck out of me. Because he was like straight up flirting with one of the students in Elliot's class. Did you notice? And I was like, why is he doing that? And then she had a line where she said to that other guy, you've got competition in the male cougar department. And I was like, oh my God, why? Why did that interaction exist? That was so unnecessary. But anyway, you know what I was going to say is that Nate was like acting so shocked that David wanted to like weigh the bag of truffles or whatever. And I was like, how did you not foresee this? This is like,
I'm surprised they didn't just put a few weights in the bottom to make it like closer.
I was
to the
like, just put so weights into the duffel bag.
Mm.
I was like, we had that whole fucking episode a little while ago where Parker was the wrong weight and like the fucking walking patterns or whatever the fuck were different. And you had all the ball bearing bloody bullshit. Like, and yeah, you couldn't have just added an extra, like, 4 pounds or whatever it was of, like, difference. Yeah, like
3.5, because they said 16.5 pounds.
Yeah. And I was like, surely it would not have been that fucking difficult. But he also says, barring any unforeseen circumstances. And I was like, well, unfortunately, Nate, the plot is kind of banking on you encountering unforeseen, like, circumstances. Like
the plot doesn't move forward without unforeseen circumstances. Why it's a television show.
Why would you bait the universe like
that?
One thing I will say is that as much as I do love Sophie this week, and I do love getting to see her be teacher Sophie, I think that's very fun. Mm-hmm. I love that she's so passionate. I love that she's helping her students and they seem to love her because, like, obviously.
And it is a trend. I do, in fact, love characters named Zach. Because her, like, the main student that we see of hers, that is Zach.
Oh, I love that.
And he is an absolute sweetie. He's a delight. We do see, like, he does come back a few times this season. So we see bits and bobs of him. So he's very fun. But yes, notes. Teacher Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I love her.
Yes.
But could she be any less covert? Fucking, when she's sitting right in front of him in a chair and she just turns her head and just starts addressing Nate. nothing to cover the fact that she's just talking out loud. And then she leaves and she makes the excuse like, oh, I've got these voices in my head. And I'm like, Sophie, babe, you've just been, it's like you're on a phone call. Like, they know you're talking to someone. They're not stupid.
I think it's meant to be playing into, like, the whole, like, you know, like, crazy artist of it all, which is a choice.
I'd believe it if they weren't so guilty of doing this the entire show. Because then, later in the restaurant, Parker, thank fuck, is using the recorder to cover herself talking, which is, like, a great cover, makes perfect sense. And I was like, why can't you do this at any other point in time? Like, oh, God, it's just, like, even if Sophie had been like, oh, I'm so sorry, I need to take a call.
Yeah.
And then stepped away and then just, like, held her phone, but actually was just talking to say on the comms. Like, sure. But she just literally just was talking out loud directly, like, less than a meter away from the dude in front. I'm like, this is silly. This is silly, guys.
The silliness is part of it. I don't know how to tell you, like.
Oh, and this is another thing. Hardison. Look, I love him. Mm-hmm. I love that he was having the time of his life, really playing into gastronomy. Like, you know, you go. I love it. He's having a giggly fun time. What is Swiggles? The laser, he was like, oh, Swiggles. And he started doing like a little dance. And I was like, is this a thing? He says it like it's a thing that we should know about.
My only guess is maybe it's like specific gamer slang.
Maybe.
Like online gaming slang, which I'm not a member of that community, so I can't like testify. But like
the only thing that I could think was like he was swaying and wiggling. So I was like, is it a swiggle? Like it's a sway wiggle? Is that what
I think what he actually says is squiggles.
Oh.
Which like doesn't make a lot more sense. Squee. To be fair.
Like, you know how like squee. You know, like squeeing and wiggling?
I genuinely don't know.
So he was giving such, I said this to you before we started recording. He was giving such little sibling energy this episode, and as an elder sibling, it did make me want to kill him. Like watching Elliot glare at him, interrupting the class, and being a little shit, I was like, I've been there. And if I was Elliot, I would have just been like, get out. Because it's just like, you know that this is important. You know what I'm trying to achieve here. Why are you interrupting me?
And Hardison's like, but no one else here is actually really here to learn about food. So I can get away with it.
Oh.
So I'm going to be the most annoying little shit you've ever witnessed.
He was driving. I love Hardison, but he was annoying this episode. And like, it's literally just because like,
And like he's meant to be annoying this episode. Like that's not like they're not like he's not like they're acknowledging that he's annoying because Elliot is annoyed. But like
I was like, oh my goodness. Oh, and something else that I was confused by. Okay, I don't understand, and I feel like it must have been intentional because they actually talked about it later in the episode. But when Elliot is like doing his sweep and he's like looking for anything that could be suspicious, right? Number one, he left all of the students unattended, which like what kind of OC health and safety violation? Like, I'm sorry, bro. Also, he wasn't wearing a hairnet, which is like,
oh, none of them were wearing a hairnet. That is, like, I understand it's TV and hairnets aren't sexy, but like also, why is no one, when like I get in the classroom, like whatever, if you get hair in your own food,
Sure,
whatever. But when they're actually cooking for other people, none of them have their hair either in hairnets, under a hat, or like tied up properly.
Right? Like, there's fire, guys. Like outside of like a safety for the people consuming the food thing, it's also like a safety for yourself thing.
It's like there's one girl, I think her name's like Whitney or something. I don't know. But she has like, she just has this full on really long loose ponytail.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's an OC health safety violation. Like
fire. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Anyway, Elliot is like, you know, looking around and he goes to the fridge, which for some fucking reason, like, and they make this point in the episode, I'm pretty sure, where it's like, for some reason, the fridge in a culinary institute is out of bounds.
Yeah.
What kind of ridiculous rule is that? That's stupid. Anyway. But they're like, what are you doing in here? And Elliot says, I'm looking for ice. And I was like, in the fridge? I was like, and the thing else, I was like, okay. And then the guy, like the other guy, refers to it as a freezer. And I was like, but it's full of vegetables and eggs. I was like, you don't keep those in a freezer.
Vegetables don't do well in a freezer. Like they get like frostburn.
Exactly. And like, why would you freeze an egg? Like what, a raw egg? What are you doing? Anyway, so I was like, this cannot be the freezer. It has to be the fridge. So why was Elliot saying he was looking for ice in the fridge? And then the guy was talking about the freezer, and then I was like, this is really weird. But then later on in the episode, Elliot makes a point to Nate where he's saying that he was in the fridge and called out the other guy for referring to it as a freezer. And I was like, okay.
But you said you're
looking for ice.
Like, you could have literally listed anything else off.
Literally, I was like, you are surrounded by fresh produce right now. What are you talking about? Also,
maybe there's like a little like freezer section within the fridge. Like, yeah, they've got to walk in.
You walk through the fridge to get to the freezer,
which has ice.
Like, maybe.
Yeah.
But like, they don't show it in any sort of like shot. And so it's like very confusing. But also, other things I was just confused about. Number one, David being like, I'm going to promote Elliot to be head chef on the opening night of the restaurant, even though I didn't even hire this man. He's just appeared and he's worked here less than 12 hours.
I mean, like, sure, to be fair, he might have hired Elliot. Like, it wouldn't be the first time they've tricked someone into hiring something and they might have just done it off screen.
Yeah, I mean, but anyway.
Because, like, they did also put a lot of effort into making sure, like, there was a legitimate reason why the other dude, like, quit. Like,
yeah.
But, like, yeah, it's still a bit, like,
it seems a bit whack.
To be fair, though, they have proved that this dude is fucking irresponsible as hell. Like, you know.
Yeah, he's crazy.
He's crazy. But he's like, oh, it's a personality thing. He's like, oh, well, they'll love the fact that you're, like,
you know, they'll grumpy, like, your essentially. Vibes.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
He's like, you're giving Gordon Ramsay and they'll love it. But yeah. Then they also have a shot of the, like, goon or whatever going to, I assumed, the ice maker.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, looking at it. And they have a whole thing where they're looking at the temperature gauge. And the temperature gauge is, like, off the charts. And I was like, what the fuck are they cooking in the ice maker? And then it was never relevant again. Like, when we found out it was troubles, I was like, oh, maybe, like, they have to be kept at, like, a certain humidity or something. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's actually where they're hiding the troubles. And then it was never relevant. They made a whole point about having him tap the temperature gauge and, like, inspecting it. And I was like, did I just miss this being important? Because I have no idea why they did that. Like, am I crazy?
I always thought it was because Hardison had sabotaged it. Because then you get the scene, like,
maybe
half a scene later where he's, like, holding the thing that he's clearly pulled out of a fridge of some sort.
Well, maybe that's what gave Elliot the excuse to go looking for ice.
Yeah.
But even then,
it's like, I don't think he needed to go that far to make an excuse to look for ice. Yeah. Like,
Elliot could have just been like, oh, I'm just getting more tomatoes for the class I'm teaching. That would have made a million times more sense and wouldn't have required property damage. But anywho, the other thing that confused me was the line, you can't grow them like mushrooms.
You can very much grow mushrooms. You can
absolutely grow mushrooms. I don't know what, like,
are there certain types of mushrooms maybe that you can't grow? But, like, most, like, standard mushrooms you can absolutely grow. Like,
we have mushroom, you can grow mushrooms at home. They're one of the easiest things to grow because they just kind of do it. Like, you don't have to tend them. You just put the spores and they just fucking go.
In terms of, like, gardening, they're pretty self-sufficient.
You're like, actually more likely to accidentally grow mushrooms than anything else, mm-hmm, because a lot of the time they'll grow out of your compost.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, you probably shouldn't eat those, but, you know, make sure you know what your mushrooms are before you eat them. But, like, even so, I was like, what are you talking about? Even if there are specific varieties that, like, only grow wild or whatever, like, sure. But you can't just broadly say mushrooms. Oh, also, mm-hmm, bone marrow and salsa verde.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about salsa verde to have a properly informed opinion on this, but it just doesn't seem like the kind of thing you'd put bone marrow in.
I don't know what salsa verde is either, so I'm Googling it.
Because, like, from what I understand, it's, like, a very fresh, fragrant, usually green sort. Like, it's not the kind of thing you'd associate with, like, high levels of saturated fats. Like, I'd be looking at, like, you know, olive oils maybe, but not animal fats.
Yeah, it's typically like tomatillos, onion, jalapeno, lime, and cilantro.
Yeah, because it's a salsa.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you talking about?
Well, he said it was for a textural thing rather than a taste thing. So,
I mean, yeah, but like, why would you go for, like, if that is the case, because bone marrow is like an incredible, like, flavor. Like, I don't know why you would do that instead of, like, an oil.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would essentially achieve, like, a very similar thing.
Of, yeah.
You know, the fat content would be increased. But, yeah, like, the bone marrow and a salsa, it was just so jarring to me. I was like, that just seems like the wrong combination. I don't know. So please feel free to correct me. I don't really know enough about. But, yeah, so I was just confused. It did not seem like the kind of thing that you would put, like, I would understand if he was like, lime juice, you know? Like, yeah. It needs more acidity. Like, yeah, okay. Sure, that makes sense. Or salt, like a seasoning, sure. But bone marrow?
But like, bro, why is that exactly where your mind went first? Like,
and also bone marrow is not like something that you can just quickly add into stuff.
No.
Like, you have to prepare it. You don't just like, I don't know. I mean, I guess they could have pre-prepared, like, you know, whatever, but
I would say that they would probably have had it in a different dish or something. So, like, it's just, like,
that's not uncommon to, like, utilize multiple ingredients across the menu. But, like, yeah, anyway, it just seemed whack. It really caught me off guard. I one thing I did like about Hardison this episode was that he threatened to bite that guy, and I did think it was very funny.
Mm.
Oh, I really, really loved when Elliot was introducing himself to the class and someone says, what's your name? And he just goes, chef. I was like, okay, serve. Like,
I do think though that like his cutting technique there is terrible.
Shocking.
Like so bad. Like none of that is even. None of that is like.
I was like, okay, maybe if you're just doing like a stock, like that's fine. But if that's going in your finished dish.
That's a fine rough chop you've got there.
Yeah.
But I feel like the point was meant to, you know, demonstrate how incredibly fast and incredibly accurate his knife skills were.
And it was fast.
And he was fast, but it wasn't really.
Not accurate.
But even then, like the motion he was doing with it, I was like, that's not the most efficient way to cut vegetables, bro. Like, because he's just kind of going chop, 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 chop with the entire, like,
knife.
Like, normally if you were cutting something like that, you do more of a rocking motion.
Yeah,
like,
you don't actually pull the full knife off the board. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm not a chef. I might have knowledge of food, but I ain't got the skills of a chef. And also, my knives at home are so fucked that my cutting technique is just whatever. Yeah, you can't judge
anyone based on your knives. Like,
my chopping technique is whatever will let the knife go through the thing I'm trying to cut. Like, that's about as far as it goes.
Oh, I also just want to call back. Okay, so we had an episode. Actually, we've already talked about this episode today. The homecoming job.
Mm-hmm.
We get flashbacks to all of them in high school. And we get flashbacks, Elliot specifically, in home ec class with the teacher. And we were both like, that's kind of gross and unnecessary.
Yeah.
This is the episode I was talking about when I'm like, we get.
Contradicts it.
Yeah. We get an episode later on that makes so much more sense as an origin story.
Yeah, and has much more impact.
And so, like, I always forget about that scene because I'm like, it just doesn't really make any sense in context. Like, there is no indication based on this episode that Elliot already had an interest in food at all. And, like, they give the home ec teacher in that episode the quote, like, you know, knives are like people. It's all about context. But then we get the quote from Elliot this week where it's like, you know, he taught me how to use a knife.
Mm.
Like, not in the way I normally use a knife. He taught me how to cook. So it doesn't make sense that they're attributing the quote about, you know, knives are about context to that home ec teacher when we canonically have someone who effectively, like, it's never really canonically established, but it's pretty widely accepted that, like, him learning to cook is one of the first things that started changing him. Like, this is one of the first steps he took in his path to, like,
it's like an outlet.
Yeah. Like, he has the quote later on of, like, you know, he can strive towards redemption, but he can never be redeemed. Like, he's done too many things to ever truly make up for what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the least he can do is try. Like,
it's very Sam Winchester, actually.
Mm-hmm. So, like, this is kind of, like, I would argue that the start of that journey where he sort of starts to realize, like, he can do more than just kill. Like, just because he's good at killing and just because he's good at the wet work that he was doing doesn't mean that's the only thing he's capable of. Like, this is when he starts to, like, change his perception of himself and starts trying to strive to be, you know, a quote-unquote better person.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. And I think it's fascinating. What season was the homecoming job? Was that season 2? 3? Was it season 1?
Season 2, I think.
Okay. It's interesting to me that that's, like, quite early on because it kind of is.
Yes. No, it's season 3 because remember the technology that they're using in that job then comes back in the finale of that season with Moro.
I don't remember it at all, but I believe you. So I feel like it's interesting because from, like, a stereotyped conventional masculinity standpoint, it is much less vulnerable and much more socially acceptable for Elliot to say, oh, the reason I got into cooking was because this, like, hot woman. Because
there was a hot home ec teacher in high school and so I decided to take home ec.
I was being a perv, so, you know, and, like, that is gross, mm-hmm. but also like in terms of broader, like, you know, stereotypes about masculinity and what is acceptable, that is much less of a vulnerable thing for him to say than I was really struggling with my concept of self-identity and how I fit in the world and how my violence impacts people. And this kind man taught me how I could use my skills to share, you know, in a community and share an art form. Like, those are two very different, like, levels of vulnerability. So it kind
so of... you think that the reunion job, that's like him telling the team that's why he got into food and that's what he was doing in high school, in like a Dean Winchester-esque, like, yeah. front of macho masculinity.
Yeah, I genuinely, like, he could just be straight up blank, especially in that season, like, if it's season three, like... Elliot has a wall up that mm-hmm. season. Like, he is not, because of Moro, mm-hmm. because he has to be hiding things from the team. Like, it would actually make canonical sense for that to just be him lying to them mm-hmm. as, like, a diversive, yeah. like, I'm just going to say some bullshit right now to get you off my case. Mm-hmm. Because he's not in a place to be open and vulnerable with them in that moment, because he cannot be open yeah. and vulnerable with them because it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that actually that's a really... Like, I think that's actually just going to be what I take from
okay.
it.
Okay.
I think
we're retconning it
to myself.
We're retconning it, so it's better.
yeah. Leverage Beth's version. But anyway.
It's not often we get that, though. Like, it's not uncommon in Supernatural. Like, we both have things that we're like, it's probably not what they intended, but we're just going to pretend this is what they meant by that to make this show better.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is the first real occasion in Leverage.
Nothing else is jumping to yeah. mind. I certainly have other issues with Leverage. Yeah.
Nothing else where we can kind of retcon our interpretation to make it better.
I have actually, while we're briefly on Supernatural, I have one more note.
Okay.
And that is that the lady at the end, who's like the government worker, introducing yeah. herself, literally was giving Sam and Dean energy. It was yeah. so funny. I was like, why is her being like, we're from this agency and our names are this and this, but not like that, this and this, totally unrelated. I was like, that is genuinely...
Like the golfers, except we're not. We're a federal yeah. agent.
It literally, I was like, are you lying? Yeah. Are you a hunter? Is this...
And in case it wasn't obvious, they are also Sophie's students.
Yeah.
Like...
It was just so funny. I was like, this is giving Sam and Dean lying about their government agency identities. It was so funny to me. I was like, I feel like I'm literally watching Supernatural right now.
Also, that Sophie's entire, like theater trip gives me, like, this lady's crazy, but also, like, everyone in theater's kind of crazy. So I'm just going to go along with it in the hopes that, like, I get some roles out of this shit. Like...
I actually kind of wonder if, like...
Because, like, Sophie's the one who's, like, funding everything as well. Like, yeah.
Well, she's got the bank to do yeah. it. I think, you know, I said earlier that, like, Nate's off and I couldn't quite remember, like, where I was at with that theory. I feel like maybe it kind of is relevant to this episode because him and Parker having that conversation where, like, she does give everyone else's hobbies or other interests outside of the jobs.
Yeah.
And then she obviously doesn't have one for herself. That's kind of the point. But she also does not really give Nate one. Like, as yeah. much as we joked about, like, oh, his, like, you know, weird need to control everyone is his hobby, it's not, actually. Like, that's not a hobby. And so I wonder if maybe,
and if, like, you actually ask Nate, his weird need to control everyone is his, like, worst character trait. Like, yeah. he hates it. Like, but yeah. he just can't stop doing it. Like, after so long, it's, like, it's an ingrained trait.
Yeah, and so I think it's interesting, like, maybe the reason he's feeling so off is because Sophie is off, like, doing her theater thing and... You know, he doesn't really have... Mm-hmm. It's like that whole thing. It's like when you're dating, you need to have friends and interests mm-hmm. outside of the person that you're dating because it's just not sustainable
yeah.
any other way. So, like, I feel like Sophie does have people and interests yeah. outside of her relationship with Nate, and Nate is sort of coming to this realization that he doesn't. Like, if Sophie isn't there, like, he has the team.
Yeah.
But that's different because mm-hmm. they're, like, his sort of children.
Yeah.
And, like, that's not...
But even then, all of his children have their own hobbies and minus friends. Partner, Parker. Like,
yeah,
you know, like...
But even then, she has friends, yeah. like, outside of...
She's got Peggy.
Exactly.
Who thinks she's a spy.
Well, Peggy's not that far off. You know, but I think maybe Nate is realizing that, like, he actually doesn't have anything built outside of this. And I'm honestly wondering if maybe the end of this season is just going to be him, like, retiring.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that... For me, it feels like a sort of natural conclusion. I can't understand how else they would really end the series. Mm-hmm. But especially, like, with Sophie obviously spending so much time with the theater, like, I can imagine her and Nate retiring to, like, Nate doing, yeah. like, whatever he wants to do. Like, if he gets yeah. back into insurance, I think that'd be really funny. But, like, Sophie
No, you know, to be fair, he does have enough money that he could just retire. Yeah. Like,
but like, I think he'd be bored though. He'd want to do something. Yeah. So it makes me wonder, like, maybe he'll want to travel or something. But I think that Sophie, like, and her theater troupe is maybe making him realize that if she's not around to hang out with him, like, he doesn't have anything else to do. Yeah. Like, outside of work.
Yeah.
So, because he seems frustrated that she's not there.
Yeah.
And, like, he seems sort of iffy this episode and the last couple episodes. And I'm like, I wonder if that's what it is. Anyway.
Okay, lovely. I don't have anything else to add about this episode, I don't think.
Neither do I.
I'm okay. Done. Lovely. If we're all done for the day, how would you describe and how would you rate this episode out of 5?
I gave it a 3.
3? Yeah, that's fair enough. I think there are some moments in this episode that are really, really interesting. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff that's, like, a bit meh. Yeah. Like, it's fun, but it's not.
I certainly did not like the episode. Yeah. But there's just, like, a couple of things where I was just like, eh. Like, the thing is, I think that there are much better episodes.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that this episode is bad. It's just that other episodes are better. Mm-hmm. That's why I gave it a 3.
This is not an episode I go back and revisit a lot.
Yeah. And, like, even that's, like, the whole discussion we had relatively early on about, like, Elliot and Nate and that interaction. Like, all that aside, like, the episode is fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It was fine. It was good.
All right, lovely. Well, the next episode is called the Gimme a K Street Job. What do you think it's about?
Okay. I am going to be very upfront. Mm-hmm. I did see the title of the next episode on the streaming service. I didn't see the thumbnail, actually, because it didn't load. So okay. I only saw the title.
Yeah.
But the way that it is titled is give me then the singular capital letter A and then the single capital letter K. And so I was like, oh, it feels like cheerleader-y. Do you know what I mean? Like, give me a Y. Give me a, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so that's kind of like how it felt.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is that maybe it's somehow like
cheerleader adjacent.
Yeah. Like it, I get that energy from just from the formatting of the title. Like, cause if it was just like, give me a K, like whatever the, you know, rest of it is, I don't know if I would have necessarily made that connection, but like seeing it formatted like that made me immediately say in my mind, give me a K, you know, K.
So if it is cheerleaders, do you have any, like, do you have any predictions specifically about, like, any tropes they might use or anything we might see? Like,
so,
got to get something out of you this week. Normally you have, like, 2 or 3 different interpretations. Yeah.
I think that, so cheerleading as a sport, I would put it on an equivalent kind of level as like gymnastics. Like I would think, I assume that there would, to be fair, I'm not a gymnast or a cheerleader, but I would assume that there's probably a lot of transferable skills.
Yeah.
If you were a cheerleader, you probably have a background in gymnastics or vice versa.
Or at least the skills aren't completely separate. You could go from one to the other.
Yeah. Transferable skills. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so I know that there, you know, and this goes for all sports, but I know specifically gymnastics can be pretty bad for it. It's just like, sort of corruption within like coaching and within like the management of it, particularly when it comes to like the health and well-being of the gymnasts themselves. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if maybe it would be something along that kind of line. Like it could be like a steroid type situation, or it could just be, you know, just shitty management generally. It's kind of difficult with leverage because like ultimately a lot of the time the plot comes down to someone is doing something because it makes them money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm struggling to come up with a way that, you know, something in this kind of area could make someone money in an underhand way that we haven't really already covered. Yeah. Like, cause we've done it with like hockey episodes before and stuff, like, or the baseball episodes. Like, so I'm wondering if it'll be like another play on a similar thing of like, oh, someone wants to buy the team. So they're trying to like make them look their best so that they sell for a higher, like, you know, whatever. But I really don't know enough about the industry to really...
We're Australian, in case you missed it.
Well, I mean, it's not like we don't have gymnastics here, but we don't really have cheerleading. I mean, apparently we do, but we
don't have... One of our local teams just went to America and come like second or third in an international competition.
I think the difference is we don't have cheerleading in schools.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like a school sport. Like, you have to find it independently.
Yeah.
Like, it's not part of...
No school offers cheerleading as a sport.
That I have ever heard of.
Like you can play footy through school, you can play soccer, you can play basketball, you can play netball, you can play volleyball.
Even like t-ball or like baseball, but not cheerleading. Mm-hmm. It's just not really offered. So yeah, I don't really know. But that's the vibe I get. I get the vibe of cheerleading.
Mm-hmm.
So like maybe along the lines of like gymnastics
Sort
of thing.
All right, lovely. Well, thank you so much for listening to us today. If you want to interact with us at all, you can find us on all of the social media platforms that have really ever existed, because we are, in fact, terminally online, except for
Twitter, because Twitter
is a current hellhole. So
Twitter's a shit show.
Twitter's a shit show, so highly recommend you come and join our Discord if you want to interact with us at all. That's probably where we're most active. Anyway, so you can talk to us about literally anything, but suggested conversation topics include, I want to know everyone's reading of the scene with Elliot and Nate.
Yeah, me too.
In the kitchen. Like, I'm just curious. I also want to know if anyone has, like, a favorite food.
Oh, yeah.
We're on the cooking episode, so.
Yeah.
Tell us about your food, weird food obsessions or not food obsessions. Would you put bone marrow in the salsa verde?
Yeah, actually, if anyone knows the answer to that, because it just feels whack to me. But, like, I don't know. I'm not an expert, so hit us up.
All right, lovely. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Oh, boy, I'm sleepy.